Good morning. I am Kelly Williams. If you don't know, I am the director of worship and music, normally sitting behind the keyboard. Thank you, Claire. But this morning, in Jeff's absence, I get to preach. So will you pray with me, please? Lord, may the words of my mouth and the meditations of our hearts be pleasing in your sight, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. This is the transcript of the actual radio conversation of a U.S. naval ship with Canadian authorities off the coast of Newfoundland. Canadians, please divert your course 15 degrees to the south to avoid a collision. Americans, recommend you divert your course 15 degrees to the north to avoid a collision. Canadians, negative. You will have to divert your course 15 degrees to the south to avoid a collision. Americans, this is the captain of a U.S. Navy ship. I say again, divert your course. Canadians, no, I say again, you divert your course. Americans, this is the aircraft carrier USS Lincoln, the second largest ship in the United States Atlantic Fleet. We are accompanied by three destroyers, three cruisers, and numerous support vessels. I demand that you change your course 15 degrees north. I say again, that's 15 degrees north, or countermeasures will be undertaken to ensure the safety of this ship. Canadians, this is a lighthouse. Your call. Sometimes it's helpful to see things from the other side, which is today's step in our stairway to heaven. Throughout the season of Lent, we've been exploring the Beatitudes, blessing statements of Jesus, which, as we have discovered, most of them are contrary to what the world teaches. And with each blessing, we climb one more step on our stairway to heaven. Our first step was admitting. Admitting we need God in our lives, and I love the way the Message Bible reads. It says, you're blessed when you are at the end of your rope. With less of you, there is more of God and His rule. Step two was getting help from God. You're blessed when you feel you've lost what is most dear to you. Only then can you be embraced by the one most dear to you. Step three was letting go and letting God. You're blessed when you're content with just who you are, no more, no less. That's the moment you find yourselves proud owners of everything that can't be bought. Our fourth blessing from Jesus was coming clean, knowing what needs to change. You're blessed when you get your inside world, your mind and heart, put right. Then you can see God in the outside world. And last week was making changes. You're blessed when you've worked up a good appetite for God. He's food and drink in the best meal you'll ever eat. And that brings us to the sixth step on our stairway to heaven, repairing. This step combines two blessing statements from Jesus. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall receive mercy. And blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called children of God. You know, at first I wondered when I had two Beatitudes, I wondered if Jeff thought maybe I couldn't preach enough on one of them. But as I lived with these two blessings, I realized that you can't have one without the other. When you are merciful, you are making peace. And making peace requires showing mercy. Blessed are the merciful. And the Message Bible reads, you're blessed when you care. Oops, not that one. No. There we go. You're blessed when you care. At the moment of being careful, you find yourselves cared for. I like this image, but it really doesn't take it deep enough. And neither does Webster's definition or our modern interpretation of mercy, meaning compassion or kindness. When Jesus said, blessed are the merciful, he was talking about more than simply being nice or caring. The word Jesus used in mercy or merciful meant to get inside the life of another person, not just to sympathize with the other's perspective, but to experience it, to actually walk in the shoes of another. This is not simply a blessing that encourages us to be nice or to do nice things. It's a call to experience our world in a most real and meaningful way. Your own perspective changes when you walk in the shoes of others. And that's why we send our kids on mission trips. And that's why serving others can be so powerful. For a brief moment, we get to experience the life of another person. And it changes us. Blessed are the merciful. The potential to change the way most of us see the world. What would happen if we took the time to put ourselves in the shoes of others? How would that affect the way we respond, think, and feel about others and their situations? Would it change the way we think of social issues? Would it alter our own expectations of what is just and right? Would it change how we see ourselves in this neighborhood, here in this city? And most important, would it fundamentally transform our hopes, fears, prejudices, and standards? I believe it would. Blessed are the merciful. Seeing the world from the perspective of another raises tolerance, forgiveness, and servanthood to new levels. Have you noticed that active compassion and response to the world provides for both kindness and accountability? To be in another's experience allows us to hold each other accountable, but with a sense of restoration, not condemnation. You know, many of us are probably familiar with John 3:16. It's the verse you see held up at sporting events frequently. And you can probably say it with me. It reads, "For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whoever believes in him shall not perish, but have everlasting life." Can anyone recite the next verse, though? John 3:17? I think it would be great if we started seeing John 3:17 held up on posters and sporting events. This verse states, "God did not send the Son into the world to condemn the world, but in order that the world might be saved through him." God did not send the Son into the world to condemn the world. If God, who has every right to condemn, chooses not to do so, then who are we to condemn? Shouldn't we follow God's example and practice compassion with each other? Unfortunately, we live in a society that is quick to condemn, quick to place blame. Our mottos and philosophies in life are "don't get mad, get even," and "look out for number one," and "if you think you've been wronged, sue." Not that there aren't some lawsuits that may be necessary and appropriate, but do I really need to sue McDonald's because my hot coffee was served hot? Consider these warning labels that have been put on products in an attempt to save manufacturers from being sued. In the manual of a chainsaw, "Do not attempt to stop the blade with your hand." On a cardboard sunshield for a car's front windshield, "Do not drive with the sunshield in place." On a household iron, "Never iron clothes while they are being worn." And on a baby stroller, "Remove child before folding." The world says, "Don't get mad, get even." Jesus said, "Blessed are the peacemakers." Blessed are those who show people how to cooperate instead of compete or fight. So let me ask, do you hold grudges? I've been known to hold a grudge or two in my life. In fact, truth be told, I'm probably holding on to one or two right now. A survey was done, and people were asked, "Do you hold grudges?" Answers to choose from were yes with many people, yes, one or two, and no, forgive and forget easily. How would you answer the question, "Do you hold grudges?" 29% of the people asked replied yes with many people. 50%, half of the people, replied yes, one or two. And only 19% replied no, forgive and forget easily. So look down your pew. If there's five of you in the pew, four of you hold grudges. Against one person, can I identify who it is? Against one person, many people, or even against God. And have you ever noticed how heavy a grudge is? Or how much energy it takes to be angry? Surely I'm not the only one in this room who has wasted energy on holding a grudge to show someone who I think has wronged me. Like, I'll show them. I'll be mad. I hold a grudge, put all this energy into being mad about something that someone else has done to me, and they are absolutely clueless. They continue on in their life like all is well, which it is in their world. And of course, that only makes me more mad and requires more energy. Jesus said, "Blessed are the peacemakers." Jesus also said this as we read on in the fifth chapter of Matthew. Here's another old saying that deserves a second look. Eye for eye, tooth for tooth. Is that going to get us anywhere? Here's what I propose. Don't hit back at all. If someone strikes you, stand there and take it. If someone drags you into court and sues for the shirt off your back, gift wrap your best coat and make a present of it. And if someone takes unfair advantage of you, use the occasion to practice the servant life. No more tit for tat stuff. Live generously. You're familiar with the old written law, love your friend, and its unwritten companion, hate your enemy. I'm challenging that. I'm telling you to love your enemies. Let them bring out the best in you, not the worst. When someone gives you a hard time, respond with the energies of prayer. Okay, I give up. For then you are working out of your true selves, your God-created selves. This is what God does. He gives his best, the sun to warm and the rain to nourish, to everyone regardless, the good and bad, the nice and nasty. If all you do is love the lovable, do you expect a bonus? Anybody can do that. If you simply say hello to those who greet you, do you expect a medal? Any run-of-the-mill sinner does that. In a word, what I'm saying is grow up. Your kingdom subjects, now live like it. Live out your God-created identity. Live generously and graciously towards others the way God lives toward you. Live generously and graciously toward others. Let go of the grudges. Practice forgiveness. Forgiveness can most definitely be a challenge, though. After all, if I forgive, how will they know that they wronged me or hurt me? We need to hang on to the fact that God knows what happened. If I forgive, am I saying that what they did is okay? Nowhere does it say that forgiveness is equal to condoning some action. And what if I don't think the other person deserves my forgiveness? Well, judgment is God's job, not ours. And to this day, God has not yet asked me to take over. Forgiveness is especially challenging because it's hard to let go of what's happened. You know, I'm still back on step three with this, the letting go and letting God. You know, I can let go, but then I go back and take it again. And then I let go, and then I take it again. Forgiveness is letting go. But in all reality, forgiveness actually benefits the forgiver more than the one who is forgiven. And if Jesus' words aren't convincing and convicting enough, the Journal of Behavioral Medicine found forgiveness to be associated with lower heart rate and blood pressure, as well as stress relief. A later study found forgiveness to be positively associated with several aspects of health, physical symptoms, medications used, sleep quality, and fatigue. Benefits of forgiveness include strengthened spirituality, better conflict management, and stress relief, all of which have a significant impact on overall health. And yet another study published in the Personality and Social Psychology Bulletin found that forgiveness not only restores positive thoughts, feelings, and behaviors toward the offending party, but the benefits of forgiveness spill over to positive behaviors towards others outside of the relationship. Forgiveness is associated with more volunteerism, donating to charity, and other unselfish behaviors. So forgiveness is good for your body, your relationships, and your place in the world. And that's reason enough to convince virtually anyone to do the work of letting go of anger and working on forgiveness. Blessed and healthy are the peacemakers. And one other thing about this blessing. Did you notice in this blessing that Jesus doesn't say that the peace lovers will be called children of God? Jesus said, blessed are the peacemakers. Those who make peace, not just want it, will be called the sons and daughters. Jesus knows the value of right relationships, and he understands the fragile bond of how we live together. Working for peace includes the whole of a person's life. For some, it's on the scale of Mother Teresa and Martin Luther King Jr., working diligently to bring peace and justice to the social conditions of the world. Truly blessed are those who work to make the world a better place for all people. I'll admit, though, thinking of peacemaking on the scale of Mother Teresa and Martin Luther King and Gandhi and winners of the Nobel Peace Prize is a bit intimidating. But God is not calling all of us to that scale of peacemaking. God is, however, calling us to be peacemakers in our own corner of the world with the people we interact with every day, which sometimes can be challenge enough for one day. Blessed are the peacemakers who work at peacemaking in all relationships, both with God and with each other. To work at building together instead of dividing helps us to see a glimpse of God's life and work in the world. A couple of years ago, my kids' high school presented a program called Rachel's Challenge. I don't know if you've heard of it. This one-hour program was presented to the students during the day, and then the kids were challenged to bring their parents back in the evening to see the same presentation. If you ever get a chance to see Rachel's Challenge, drop everything you are doing and go. Rachel's full name was Rachel Joy Scott. She was the first student to be killed in the massacre at Columbine High School in Littleton, Colorado, 11 years ago. She was 17 years old. And in her short time on this earth, she lived the life of today's blessings, of a peacemaker and of the merciful. And since her death, she has continued to be the example of a peacemaker. You see, Rachel believed and lived that through kindness, she could change the world one person at a time. So far, her story has been shared with over 11 million people. Todd, you got that?
Jefferson County 911.
Yes, I was just called by
high school. There is a student here with a gun.
Okay, has anybody been injured, ma'am?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And the school is in a panic, and I'm in the library. I've got the gun down under the table, kids. Put it under the table.
Rachel Scott was the first student to be killed in that terrible tragedy at Columbine High School on April 20th, 1999. Rachel had written an essay a month before she died that reflected her actions and beliefs. She titled it, My Ethics, My Codes of Life.
When Rachel wrote her essay to start a chain reaction with kindness and compassion, she had already been practicing that for several years in her school, and she had been reaching out to others. And when she said, I have this theory that if one person will go out of their way to show compassion, it will start a chain reaction of the same. People will never know how far a little kindness will go. That wasn't a theory for her. She had been practicing that for the past several years. Rachel challenged her reader to look for the best in others, to start that chain reaction and to make a difference in the lives of people around them. You know, what's amazing to me is that Rachel not only wrote a challenge to start a chain reaction that would touch the lives of others, but she somehow sensed that her life was going to touch and impact the lives of millions of people. We found something she had written and drawn on the back of an old dresser. When she was 13 years old, she drew an outline of her hands, and in the center of one of her hands, she said, these hands belong to Rachel Joy Scott and will someday touch millions of people's hearts. And it's almost as though she knew her life was going to have an impact that it has had after her death on millions of people.
Daryl has shared... shared Rachel's story with.
This is from the essay that she wrote 1 month before her death. While it was written by a teenager in 1999, you can just as easily hear Jesus preaching these words on a hillside to a crowd of people. Compassion is the greatest form of love humans have to offer. According to Webster's Dictionary, compassion means a feeling of sympathy for another's misfortune. My definition of compassion is forgiving, loving, helping, leading, and showing mercy for others. I have this theory that if one person can go out of their way to show compassion, then it will start a chain reaction of the same. Rachel Scott said, "People will never know how far a little kindness can go." Jesus said, "You're blessed when you care. You're blessed when you can show people how to cooperate instead of compete or fight. Take the step of repairing. You just may start a chain reaction."